Good morning and welcome to The Business of Living, the show that brings you strategies and practical solutions for managing your life and career. I'm your host, Scott Ventrella, here on a very warm and steamy, August morning, but it's still July. It seems like, it feels a little bit like August. What do you think, Jill? Yeah.
It's too hot in here.
I drive in, and I think I'm going to start keeping a record of the interesting things that I see people doing.
Like what?
On the highway. Oh my gosh. I don't want to go into a rant because I want to get on topic here, but, you know, I saw a guy shaving. Of course, it was cordless, no. So we got to give him that. But he's doing about 75 miles an hour center lane, and he is shaving. Okay, equal opportunity here. I've seen women doing their mascara, and I'm not talking about, you know, local stuff. I'm talking about on the highway doing 75, 80. Full makeup. Yeah, mascara, lipstick. I saw a guy reading a paper on his lap. So, you know, hey, we don't need it's not just about the Blackberries.
No, it's not about the texting. It's everything. It's eating, drinking a soda, everything.
Oh, it is just, I don't know. So listen, if you're listening to the show and you're driving, you know, look, listen to the show. That's great. Keep your eyes on the road and do that other stuff at home. You know, folks, there's a time and a place, really. Okay, so that was my little bit of a rant. But what really we're here to talk about today, it's jobs, unemployment. You know, the figures just came out late last week. So this is going to be one of those bad news, good news things. So we'll get to the good news in just a second, because I'm that kind of a silver lining type of guy, and I am actually taking this data right off. Sorry, I've got to get my glasses off here so I can read this thing. This is coming right off of the Bureau of Labor Statistics website. So, and I don't think this is new news. If you paid attention to the news just late last week, the employment edged up by 80,000. That's it, just by 80,000, well below what had been anticipated, what had been promised. The unemployment rate was unchanged at 8.2%. Professional business services added a few jobs, et cetera. Now, here's what I think is interesting, though, that the numbers, and so I saved you the trouble from going to the website, because it is interesting when you start to look more closely at the numbers. So I'm going to share a few stats with you, and then we're going to talk to a career coach, an expert in this area, to see what we can do about this. So the number of unemployed people. So that 8.2% in terms of numbers is 12.7 million people out of work. But that only tells part of the story. And I thought this was really fascinating. So among major worker groups, we have the unemployment rate, and this is verbatim right off of the Bureau of Labor Statistics website. Unemployment rate for blacks is 14.4%. It edged up. The unemployment rate for adult men, 7.8%. Adult women, 7.4%. Teenagers, 23.7%. We're not that far out of New York City. So in New York City, I'm reading here from the New York Post, 35.6%. It says jobless teens face the dog days of bummer, and it's driving parents nuts. Further, a few more stats. Hispanics, 11%. Asians, 6.3%. And they've got, again, they got it sliced and diced every which way. Now, here's the just a little bit more depressing news, because, again, I never really thought about this. You've got a number of people that are employed only part-time. They were full-time, and their hours were cut back, so now they're part-time. That number is 8.2. Pile that on top of the 12 million. Okay, so they've been cut back. Either their hours were cut back or they were unable to find full-time work. They had to settle for the part-time. Okay, add another 2.5 million. They must have a lot of fun coming up with some of these, these terms. People who are marginally attached. How do you like that? Are you marginally attached to the labor force? Okay, so that's down a couple of million. These individuals were not in the labor force, wanted and were available for work and had looked for a job sometime in the prior 12 months. They were not counted as unemployed because they had not searched for work in the 4 weeks preceding the survey. Okay, finally, Among the marginally attached, there were 821,000 discouraged workers. Of course. So you're either, you know, you're part-time and then, you know, getting a little bit worse, you're marginally attached, and now there's a discouraged category. Look, they just plumb, you know, they've given up. And so, you know, add that to, I won't go on with it. Are we tired of the numbers already? How about some good news now? And joining us today to talk a little bit about this good news and the silver lining is career coach and author of the Wall Street Professionals Survival Guide. I really like that. Roy Cohen, his website is www.careercoachnewyork.com. That's www.careercoach, all one work, NY, all one word. Working like the way I slipped that in there, all one word, newyork.com, ny.com. Roy, good morning.
Good morning, Scott. Nice to speak with you.
Are you sure about that? You know, I don't know if you caught some of those.
No, I feel like crawling under a rocket yeah. after your the stats that you shared.
I don't even know why I got out of bed this morning. I mean, really? But listen, you are a career coach. Tell us, first of all, so it sounds like if you're a career coach and we've got these dismal employment figures, you must be in pretty good shape, yeah?
Well, I'm very fortunate. I have a robust private practice, and I also work with corporate clients on helping clients to manage transition and also managing life at work. I've been doing this for a good number of years. So, you know, over time, you establish your credibility and a client base. It's not enough now just to help people get jobs. It's also important to help them survive and thrive on the job at work. So my focus is divided between two stakeholders, those folks who are in transition and those folks who are trying and wanting to be as successful and productive at work and to be rewarded for the investment that they make at work.
No, and I like that, too, the fact that you work with people who are currently, you know, in the workforce, that, you know, to survive and thrive, because there are people that are in somewhat of a survival mode, or those who, you know, the workplace is changing so rapidly, and there are folks that either, you know, don't see what's coming up behind them, or they're not making those adjustments, so that whole idea of transitioning. But let's talk about now the whole idea of those folks that are now, you know, out of work, have been out of work, and however you want to, you know, take the first pass through this in terms of, you know, do we start with the teenagers? Like my daughter, who's probably still sleeping at this point.
Actually, that is the issue. She may still be sleeping, and the reality is that the early bird catches the worm, and so do the folks who are precise and clear and hardworking and ambitious. There's no way around it. People who work harder at job search are more likely to land successfully and to do so more quickly.
Well, I'm glad we're taping this show. I'll let my in her defense, she was up extremely late babysitting.
That's a good thing. That qualifies as a job.
That qualifies as a job. But I do not want to diminish the point you just made, Roy. It's an excellent one, because I come across so many people that, you know, they knocked on a few doors, they filled out a few resumes or filled out a few applications, and then they figured, well, look, and then they hear the statistics that I've just been sharing, you know, why bother, you know, I'll just wait until everybody goes back to, all the college kids go back to school, I'll wait till the fall. But I think what I'm hearing is that you're saying that, you know, don't wait until the fall. You know, it is, you know, looking for something is work, and, you know, the more you put into it, the better shot you have, yeah?
Sure, absolutely. You know, when I was approaching college, literally in orientation, my very first day at Cornell, I was sitting in a lecture, it wasn't an official class lecture, and somebody made the announcement, whoever it might have been, maybe it was the dean of one of the schools at Cornell, look to your left, look to your right. By the time you graduate, the person to your left or and or right will not have graduated. Well, I That same principle applies to job search. You don't want to be the person on the left or the right. Somebody's got to make it successfully through this process. And the folks who succeed are the folks who work the hardest.
So what for the for that first category, that the teenagers, because there's still time. I mean, my gosh, we're still in
creatively. What sorts of opportunities exist for teenagers where there are few barriers to entry? You know, teenagers below a certain age may not be eligible to work in certain environments. However, they can mow lawns, they can babysit like your daughter, which is terrific. They can run errands for elderly folks. They can even volunteer, because volunteering is a great way to get valuable experience so that as they mature and go to college, if they choose to go to college, that experience is going to make them much more attractive to potential summer employers. So the more experience you get, whether it's paid or unpaid, the better you're going to look when you're out in the real job market.
No, I like this also, because what you're suggesting here is we have to think somewhat unconventionally. So it may not be what we might have imagined. Rather, it could be maybe actually also holding down two or three smaller jobs.
Pulling together a couple of part-time opportunities that collectively create a real value. So it could be that you're making money babysitting. It could be that you're volunteering at the library because you have an interest in library science. It could be that you're volunteering in a lab because you may have an interest in potentially going into medicine or medical research. So the latter two won't pay money, but babysitting will. So one will support the other.
I really like that, because again, also the idea, and I think for parents, for many parents, they're okay with that. It's you need to be doing something. And of course, it's nice if you get paid for what you do. But like you said, if you string a few things together and maybe a little bit of a combination, you're achieving multiple goals or purposes.
Well,
excellent.
To use a financial reference point, it's managing a portfolio. And if you've got a basket of commitments, some paying, some unpaying, there may be a much greater return on the investment that you're making in terms of your time, because collectively they will move you forward. And that's really what we're looking to do. And what I'd be doing if I were a teenager now is I'd be going to everybody I know, and I'd say, look, I'm looking to make some money on a part-time basis. Any recommendations? I'm also looking to volunteer. Any recommendations about where I can get some hands-on experience so that I can learn about and fill in the blanks? Part of this is really taking some time to reflect, and even though teenagers may not have a lot of life experience upon which to reflect, they still have an idea about some of the areas that may be of interest to them.
That's fantastic.
Excellent. Starting point.
Excellent advice. Now let's work our way up the age ladder. So my nephew, after working extremely hard, just graduated. All excited about his prospects, optimistic, has a marketing degree, was living in the New York City area, but decided he wanted to go out to Denver to try to find some work. Thought his prospects were pretty good. Packed things up, headed out there, didn't exactly shut everything down here, but headed out to Denver, spent a couple of weeks really pounding the pavement, had a couple of hopeful interviews, but came up empty. And I think, again, so we've got a lot of newly minted, college graduates that are also carrying extremely, heavy financial burdens in the form of student loans.
Yeah.
And so a slightly different category and slightly different conditions. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't have access to a lot of information about your nephew, but before I'd make a dramatic move like a move to Denver, I'd make sure that I know everything about the marketplace, that I would have tapped into potential network, maybe through LinkedIn, through the college that I attended, professional associations, so that I'm better prepared to exploit time that I'm there. And also I need to establish realistic expectations about how long it takes to land. And I've got to think both short-term and long-term in terms of opportunities. What do I need to do in order to get a job right now so I can make some money. Maybe I'll wait tables, mow lawns, paint houses, whatever it is, with the understanding that I'm going to need some flexibility so that I can job hunt on a serious basis. And secondly, how clear am I on what I want to be doing? And is Denver the right market for me to be doing that? Did I do a market survey prior to making the move? I may love the idea of living in Denver or Boulder, but are there institutions there that have the potential to hire me? And that's an important question that always needs to be raised regarding an interest in moving to a new community. I may want to live in Fort Lauderdale. I may also want to be a banker. There may not be any opportunities for me in Fort Lauderdale.
No, you know what? You're good because so you know nothing about my nephew, but I will say this, that the main driver for Denver was just because, you know, he loves the mountains, loves to hike, and thought, well, you know, and Denver's a fairly big city, so it's not like going to some, you know, small town with a population of three. So I think he had a, you know, he certainly thinking that Denver wasn't unreasonable, but you know, that's an excellent point. You make another excellent point.
Well, may I jump in for one other moment? I think this is an even more important observation, and that is that if Denver is an attractive place for your nephew, it's going to be an attractive place for a lot of other recent college graduates. So the competition for opportunities will be even more intense.
So you mentioned something else, and that's also, you know, you got to think about the competition. Later on in the show, we're going to be talking about, you know, branding and, you know, personal and professional branding. But I think about, you know, when I graduated in 1982 with a marketing degree, believe it or not, the unemployment was about 10% back then. Mm-hmm. A lot of people forget that. And I'm not comparing. It's not necessarily, you know, a total comparison. But unemployment was 10%. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have LinkedIn. We didn't have all those other networking things that are available today, Monster.com and so on. It was the old-fashioned way where I remember printing out about 100 resumes with cover letters and you stuff envelopes and stamps. And I kept a folder of all the rejections that I had received. And so I can relate to the idea of you work so hard, you get the degree. Yeah, I had a lot of debt back then. And, you know, you're hopeful that you're going to find something. And I didn't. I didn't find it. It took me actually, you know, 2 years before I found a quote-unquote serious job that kind of lined up with my degree. But in the meantime, and you kind of touched on this, I took a job with a, you know, carpenter. I was a maintenance man, making hardly any money. And then when the first opportunity came along, I actually registered through a temp agency and did a lot of temp work where you never knew where you were going to be from one day to the next. The pay was lousy, but it was at least, you know, you were doing something and generating some income. And then the first offer that came along was as a shipping and receiving clerk, making terrible money, but for a really what I thought was a cool company. I took the job, and I had to swallow my pride. I really did. You know, I've got a degree and I'm a shipping clerk. You know, tell that to your folks. But within a year, I had started to work my way up the ladder. Long story short, I was with that organization for 11 years. And by the time I had left, and it was a professional services firm, I had become, you know, worked my way into the ranks of one of the professional consultants. And, you know, when I think back to that experience and I think about some of the college students today, and I'd love your thoughts on this, I hear a lot of them that come to me for advice. You know, they're turning down these opportunities. They're waiting for the big pay, you know, the big opportunity and something that lines immediately up with their degree or their area of interest. Your thoughts on that?
Well, they may be waiting a long time if they're establishing conditions that may not be satisfied, because companies are going to hire and promote people who have experience. And the reality is that we all have to pay our dues. All of us do at one point or another. And looking back over a career, and I have the benefit of being able to do that over a couple of decades now, my belief is that, you know, there's a lot of grunt work that has to happen in order to find yourself in a place where you achieve real satisfaction and feel like you're fulfilling your potential. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. And that's why what I always recommend for college students is in your very first year, begin to formulate a game plan for yourself so that you know what you want to get out of college. And you're also forming the right relationships. You're getting the right experience. You're meeting the right people. And you're learning the language so that you can sound like you are somebody who should be working in that capacity. So you establish your credibility.
Roy, sound advice. We're speaking with Roy Cohen. Roy is a career coach and the author of The Wall Street Professional Survival Guide. We are going to return in just a very short second. You're listening to The Business of Living Show with your host, Scott Ventrella, here at 1490 WGCH.
Welcome to the wild. Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, where you can turn your backyard into an unlimited oasis of natural harmony. With birdhouses, feeders, and baths, no-waste seed blends, and a great selection of garden and gift items, Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop is any nature lover's paradise. Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, in Bedford Hills, New York, and now in Darien, Connecticut.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Business of Living. I'm your host, Scott Ventrella. We're speaking with Roy Cohen. Roy is a career coach and the author of The Wall Street Professional Survival Guide. Roy, thanks for joining us. I got more questions. Can you hang out with us for a while longer?
Absolutely. And one additional self-promotion. My book was just selected by Bloomberg as one of the...
It may not require a textbook,
2012.
But it's filled with valuable...
Okay, I'm sorry. We have all kinds of things. Please repeat that, because I want to make sure we catch this.
I was just engaging a little bit of self-promotion. My book was just selected as a Bloomberg best summer read for 2012.
Well, I hope folks that you heard that. When I was out of college, as I had just mentioned, one book that I found extremely helpful, and more of a reference book, is "What Color's Your Parachute" by Richard Bowles, and that's been continuously updated. So you've got a couple of great sources. And by the way, you know, Roy, I'm glad you mentioned your book. And ladies and gentlemen, as you know. You know, this show, we don't necessarily promote any one particular, you know, organization or in this particular case, coach. But I will say this, Roy, so far, your advice has been spot on. And I would urge folks listening to this to pick up your latest book, the current book, The Wall Street Professional Survival Guide.
Well, let me make another observation, and I know I'm just spewing this stuff out, Scott. I mentioned that a moment ago, not because I'm so comfortable promoting myself, but I do believe that at the very heart of successful job search is the ability to promote yourself. And for a lot of us, myself included, we have to learn how to put ourselves out there and to be bold. And sometimes it means finding yourself in a place that's a little uncomfortable. So self-promotion is something that all of us need to learn and or develop if we're going to be successful in job search.
Yeah, I completely agree. And a lot of people are, again, not very comfortable with that. Okay, let's work our way. So we've kind of hit the teenagers hanging out, you know, for the summer, the college students all competing with one another for work, maybe waiting it out till the fall. Now we've got people who have been in the workforce and are amongst those, you know, 12 plus million looking for work. What advice do you give people who, you know, who are now, you know, on the outside looking in, who are hearing, you know, about these numbers, who might have more serious financial obligations, mortgages, rent, may have children, and other, you know, serious financial obligations, so that, you know, much more stress and pressure. And I think we can relate to that, again, having both of us been, you know, in this environment for several decades. We meet with people all the time, and I could see it when they come to me for advice. You just see it on their face. They are, you know, what was that word that the BLS used? Discouraged, but I think that's even an understatement. You know, panicked.
What? There's a lot of fear out there.
There's a lot of fear out there, exactly. So somebody knocks on your door, rings you up. How do you begin to, you know, address some of their issues? Where's the starting point, and what kind of advice can you give them?
It's actually a very simple process. It's a lot more complicated to execute. And the very first step is to be clear on what it is that you want to do. And surprisingly, a lot of folks who are in job search now have reached a point where they feel desperate and they're willing to do virtually anything. And that message becomes diluted. So when you're out in the marketplace and what you're communicating is, I'm prepared to do anything, that's not going to get you a job. So there needs to be some precision in what you want, why you want it, and how the organization or organizations that you speak to will benefit by having you in that capacity. So that's the first step. What's the target that you are focusing on and pursuing? And then we establish a game plan and strategy, which includes everything from your positioning statement, let me explain to you what I'm looking to do, why I'm looking to do it, and your resume, the collateral material you use like cover letters, and the follow-up. And we need to make sure that all of that is seamless, because you need to make sure that whatever you're doing is literally an assault, a full-scale assault, so that people see you as being both passionate and committed to wanting to make something happen. And then the third piece of this puzzle, and it's very simple, it's staying focused and not allowing the discouragement to trip you up. And what I find in job search for smart people especially is that rejection can be immobilizing. And we've got to be very careful that people don't find themselves in a place where they say, well, what's the point? And I think what you alluded to earlier on in the broadcast about the unemployment numbers is that they don't really reflect the true number of people who are out there not working, because a lot of people have just removed themselves from the job market and from job search. So three pieces to this, three elements to this equation. One, clear targets. Two, a solid game plan and strategy, with a third component, which is a focus on staying on track, and an early warning system so that you don't get discouraged. And if you do get discouraged, you can emerge from that quickly, because you recognize the signs.
Yeah, I think incredibly important to remember, because you know, you mentioned in your earlier comments that, you know, people are afraid. There's a lot of fear out there. And I think prospective employers pick up on that. We may not think they do, but I think that's expressed, you know, through our behaviors. That stare in the lights in the headlights in the in your eyes, kind of a stare. And so excellent advice also that, you know, you don't want to come across as though you're desperate. I want to just roll back for a second. You mentioned as part of the game plan and strategy to have a positioning statement, resume, and cover letter. Of those three, is there any one that's more important? Is there a particular order to that?
Well, my belief is that the very foundation, the core of a successful job search, is having a clear understanding about what you want and why you want it. Once you've got that, it's very easy to do a resume. If I am clear on what I envision for myself, then it's very simple to produce a resume which pulls together all of my experience, all of my relevant experience, and edits out the stuff that may not be as important. So once I've got my messaging and I know that it's on point, it's very easy for me to produce all the other stuff, so that way I can approach my job search with the energy and passion that are critical. So a resume is not should never be viewed as a barrier to entry. It should be viewed as a support tool, a support resource, and it's a lot easier to do when you're clear on your target and you know why and you feel comfortable expressing your reasons for why you want to pursue that target.
Fantastic. And I think a lot of people, they focus solely on the resume. When what I'm hearing from you, it's, hey, really be very clear on, not only what your target is, but also how you are positioning yourself. Because then I believe what I can infer from that is then you're going to make the necessary adjustments to both resume and then the cover letter. I would imagine you're making adjustments relative to a specific opportunity.
Yeah, they're all extensions on the positioning statement, because what you're explaining when you describe why are how all of the pieces fit together. And that's essentially what a resume is. A resume is an inventory of relevant experience, not comprehensive experience, but relevant experience. And that's exactly what your positioning statement is.
Roy, you've been extremely helpful. Any final thoughts before we wrap up this segment?
Well, I mentioned before that rejection can be immobilizing in job search. I have two thoughts. One, be aware of it so that you don't take it personally. It's a numbers game, and I think that's particularly important. And I just think that it's important also to stay focused on what you're looking for, but also build in a little bit of a wiggle room so that you don't become so rigid in job search that you're not willing to explore other options and opportunities.
Fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, if you are either, out of work or you know somebody that's, struggling and looking around, please be sure to recommend Roy Cohen's book, The Wall Street Professional's Survival Guide. Also, Roy, you have a website, and I want to get this straight, www.careercoach, all one word, ny.com, careercoachny.com, and that would be a great way for folks to get a hold of you. Thank you so much for joining us today, Roy. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And you have a terrific day. You are listening to The Business of Living Show. I'm your host, Scott Ventrella. Hey, right along the lines of your career search, have you thought about your brand? Have you thought about your personal brand and what you are transmitting, either consciously or unconsciously? Yes? No? Well, coming up right after the break, we have Chris Ruby. She is the founder and CEO of Ruby Media Group, that's going to join us and talk a little bit about personal branding, coming right up here at 1490 WGCH.
Kimry Group is a boutique media service agency helping Fortune 500 corporations, nonprofits, and local businesses in all aspects of advertising, photography, and promotions. Kimry Photo includes assignments, stock images from 1925 to 2011, consulting, permissions, photo editing, and research, as well as multimedia presentations. Kimry Media creates and executes activity for advertising, digital media, and sponsorship. To succeed and show how you can make a difference and get noticed, visit KimryGroup.com. That's K-Y-M-R-Y Group.com or contact Marty Welch Dickinson at 203-846-0359.
Join us, Bianca and Philip, on Let's Talk every Thursday night at 8 p.m. to discuss life, love, and parenting.
Just give you the background a little bit. I started Ruby Media Group directly upon graduation. I went to Boston University's College of Communications, and I majored in public relations. I had 13 internships by the time I graduated. And
13 internships?
Yes.
Were they all unpaid?
Yes.
Your folks must have loved that.
I think today you don't have a choice if you want to break into at least this field, if not many others.
Mm, excellent. And by the way, that reinforces a point that was made in the first part of the show about, hey, do what you need to do, to pursue, your passion and your career. What you're aspiring to.
Yes. I mean, I think it's critical to get that experience because it helps tailor, what specific areas are you passionate about and where are your strengths. And the more internships you have by the time you graduate or even after graduation, it really helps you see that. So what I did is I essentially started my company out of school. I had another internship right after school, and then I literally decided there's a huge trend right now in social media. But in Westchester County, there's a lot of businesses that really need help with this. So I saw a big market opportunity, and this was 3 years ago, to really help these businesses. So I left on that Friday, and that Monday I really had my first client who happened to be, you know, essentially another management consulting agency where I could work with them on multiple client projects of theirs for social media. So that was really how I got started. And then from there, I've evolved into, originally we just started doing social media. Now we are a full-service public relations and social media agency.
So I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm so intrigued by this because, you know, when we talk about the unemployment, you know, figures ranging right now around 12 million, not to mention the people who are underemployed, people who have given up, people who are, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, you know, discouraged, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you actually... you know, the country was built on, you know, the whole idea of, you know, entrepreneurs and you know, taking the risk. I mean, that is another option for people. Did it come easy for you? Was it reinforced? I mean, there's not a lot of people that would take that kind of a leap, at least at that stage in your own, you know, career. It wasn't like you worked for a big agency for 10 or 15 years and you know, accumulated a certain amount of, you know, income, et cetera, or savings to then launch your own career or waited until semi-retirement. I mean, you took a big jump where most people would have shied away from something like that.
Yeah, I think, and even as the Greenwich Post, they quoted it as a now or never approach. And I think that's really a great way to put it. I mean, I thought, this is, if I'm not going to do this now, when else am I ever going to do it? Because what's going to happen is I'm going to get stuck in this corporate hierarchy that most people become involved in. Once you're in it, why would you know, it's much harder to come out of it because you have a steady paycheck. You have more security
than
someone who goes out on their own and does what I decided to do. And for someone that's young and out of school, that can be risky, but there's also, you know, great rewards to it because you're essentially carving your own path and creating your own destiny. And I think that's really, really important. And you know, one of my goals in sharing the recent news about the 34 awards that we won with the Ad Club is to show the younger people out there, look, here's a great example of someone who started their own company out of school in 2009, one of the worst. I mean, that was one.
That's right. Oh, my gosh. That's right.
So when I graduated, I mean, people didn't have jobs for months, truthfully. And so, my goal here is to show them, and also it's June, you know, people are graduating now. Listen, if you keep trying and no one's getting back to you and you are passionate about something, why not give it a shot? Go out, see if you can make something out of it. Get a business coach if you need to, but give it a shot. Because I think with the advent of social media, it makes marketing and branding your business easier than ever before to get it out there. And especially even with office, you know, solution and options today, that's another great way that you can essentially have, you know, overhead that's lower than ever before when you first start out with virtual office solutions and other things of that nature. I just think there are so many options available to young people today to start their own businesses. And for us, you know, I agree, if you come out and you don't have that agency experience, you need to partner with other agencies that do. Mm. And that's what I did for a while in the beginning. I let other agencies sub me out for work. And that's how I was able to learn, you know, really learn the craft more so of what they were doing. And also, you know, it was inherently helpful for me as I adapted and molded my business more so into a public relations agency. One of the best ways for me to do that was by writing. And, you know, I have multiple columns, actually, but by writing and seeing how I was pitched, that helped me understand inherently how to pitch better.
Now, I love this because not only did you blaze your own trail, but as I, you know, when I checked out Ruby Media Group online, I mean, you have created opportunities for other people. And I love what you just said. Hey, give it a shot. That will be the rally cry for today. We've got about another half minute or so, Chris. Any parting thoughts, advice? And how can people learn more about your organization?
If you would like to learn more about our organization, you can go to rubymediagroup.com, or you can always friend me on Facebook. My name is Chris Ruby, again, the founder of Ruby Media Group, public relations and social media agency in Westchester and Fairfield County. friend me on Facebook, send me a message, and I will get back to you.
And by the way, it's Chris, K-R-I-S. Chris, yes. Thank you so much. You've really provided a great service for our listeners. I know there are a lot of people that are out there struggling. There are people who are, you know, borderline, you know, despairing, and it's always nice to hear from people like you who have made that kind of a leap and have been successful, and my guess is you will continue to meet with great success. Thank you so much for joining us. We've been speaking with Chris Ruby. Chris is the founder and CEO of Ruby Media Group, and you have been listening to the Business of Living show. I'm your host, Scott Ventrella. We shall see you next week. So long, here at 1490 WGCH.
This is your community radio station serving Lower Fairfield County and Westchester. 1490 WGCH in Greenwich.